Tomorrow, the U.S. House of Representatives is scheduled to debate the repeal and replace of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. A big part of that is Medicaid and changes to Medicaid. Medicaid in Wisconsin, 1.1 million people get health care and other help through Medicaid. That's one out of every five Wisconsin residents. To talk about potential changes to Medicaid under what the U.S. House will debate tomorrow, I want to thank Lisa Pugh, State Director of the ARC Wisconsin, Ben Fleischman, who's a Medicaid recipient and lives in Madison, and his mom, Barbara Katz, Director, Family Voices of Wisconsin. Thank you very much. First of all, let's tell me what the ARC does and what Family Voices does, and then we'll ask Ben a little bit about him. So talk about the ARC, please, Lisa.
So sure. The ARC is a statewide organization. We represent the rights of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We have 15 local chapters across the state, and we're part of a network of ARCs, approximately 650 chapters of the ARC across the country.
Okay, thank you. And Family Voices, Barbara?
Yeah, so in Wisconsin, Family Voices of Wisconsin is the family-to-family health information center. There's one in every state. We're also part of a national Family Voices network. Our work is in supporting families in three areas, education, information, and training, family leadership, and public policy. And we focus on supporting families that have kids with disabilities and special health care needs in their navigating and knowledge of health care and community supports.
Thank you. And Ben, tell us, how old are you?
25.
25? And you work. Tell us about your job.
I don't work.
So you have, how many jobs do you work?
How many jobs do you work at, Ben?
Four.
Four?
And what are they?
Q106.
Q106, the country station?
Yep.
Okay.
What's the second one?
Doyle
Administration Building, part of Madison School District. What's the third job?
Aren't working.
Yep. And what's the fourth job?
City County Building.
In the City County Building.
City County Building. Ben, thank you very much for joining us. I understand you had to get off work. You must have if you have four jobs, so thanks for coming in. Let's talk about Medicaid overall. Now, Medicaid, my numbers here come from the Fiscal Bureau. And the governor's budget says in fiscal year 2018, Medicaid will cost a total, and that's important, of $9.7 billion. Mm-hmm. 59% of that will come from the federal government. 41% of that will come from state general purpose revenues. Now, there's an additional $1.5 billion that gets us to the 9.7, which is program and segregated, which is much too deep in the weeds. So let's talk first, how has Medicaid fared under the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare? Lisa?
Sure. I mean, Wisconsin was one of those states that didn't take the Medicaid expansion, but we still benefited from having exchanges and having more affordable health care for lots of people. And for people with disabilities, that meant the most important thing was that coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. So I know Barbara and I hear all the time from people with disabilities and families who previously were terminated from jobs or who couldn't get coverage because they had this pre-existing or disabling condition. So that's probably the biggest benefit of the Affordable Care Act that's happened for people with disabilities, and then having some essential health benefits in the package so that some of the supports and therapies that people with disabilities, including my daughter and very likely Ben and other folks, receive are called habilitative benefits. So sorts of therapies that help people to maintain their skills. So there are a lot of things in there that really helped people with disabilities to have better access to health care.
The
other thing that I just want to add, those essential health benefits are critical. There's a piece in that they brought, that the essential health benefits brought mental health in parity with physical health. So for the first time, many care participants are covered for mental health benefits and AODA, alcohol and other drugs. So the addiction issues, mental health benefits, those are all critical coverage aspects that people did not have access to before.
Okay. And Ben, do you get help living in your apartment?
Yeah.
You do? Okay. And do you get help going back and forth to work?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm so curious. Mm-hmm. You work for Q106. What do you do?
What's your job
at Q106?
Country Countdown.
Country Countdown.
And you're their executive producer, right, for Country Countdown USA?
Yeah.
And your favorite country artist is?
John Party.
John Party?
My boss was late.
Your boss was late.
Your boss was late.
But you were on time, weren't you?
But you were on time.
Excellent.
Okay. Let's look at who gets Medicaid now in Wisconsin. We said that the total is about 1,125,000. Of that, 498,000 or 44% are children. Again, my source here is the Fiscal Bureau analysis of the governor's budget. That's in three main categories. Badger Care Plus, 806,000 recipients. And then you have elderly, blind, and disabled, 237,600. Of those, now I just want to break down the 237,600. 66,518 are elderly. And of the disabled, 139,530 are non-elderly disabled. Now, Ben's 25. Would that be the category that he's in, Barb?
It is, yep. So for that non-elderly disabled, it's people with disabilities 18 to 64. So it's people who are no longer considered children, but who are who might still be in school, but starting at the age 18, they're in that category.
Tell us about what Medicaid means for Ben and how he's able to live his life and have four jobs.
Ben has four jobs in the community. Ben moved into his apartment with his roommate in what month did you move in?
September.
And has been living independently. Ben needs help with activities of daily living. So mm-hmm. you need help with what? Getting showered and making your lunch and making your dinner and doing your laundry. What else? Can you think of other things that Tom helps you with?
Swimming.
You do go swimming in the community. But one of the critical things is that people don't realize is that Medicaid pays for these things called home and community-based services.
Yeah, let's talk about those.
Okay. So home and community-based services are supports that people get to work in the community, to live in the community. It's far cheaper for people to be supported in the community in their own homes than traditionally in places like institutions or nursing homes. If people don't live with their own family and they don't have access to community living, then institutional living is the default, which is way more expensive and way more limiting on people's lives, importantly. Ben, I think you have a busier life and a more active life than your brothers do, and certainly your parents. And Ben has access to the community and can go out and volunteer and go to country music concerts because he has that support that Medicaid pays for as a companion for him.
Okay, and go over the options if Medicaid was perhaps dialed back for someone like Ben.
Okay.
Go over those options again, please.
Well, they'd be limited, right? We are finally seeing no waiting lists in the state for adults. In 2018, Family Care will be and IRIS will be statewide, which means that there will be no more waiting lists for long-term support services. For kids, we're seeing for the first time in the governor's budget, he's proposing to eliminate waiting lists for children for long-term support services. This has been something that we've been working on, Lisa, what, for decades, right?
2,600 children waiting.
2,600 children waiting will no longer wait. If this is rolled back, if Medicaid is put on a per capita or block grant, I think our huge concern is that we don't have that federal-state partnership anymore. And what that means is we don't have those matching funds coming to our state, which means that as we need more Medicaid dollars, because either more people are enrolling or people might have higher costs, maybe there'll be a disease outbreak that people will need more medical attention. It will all take away from those benefits of those home and community-based services. And we're going to be looking at cheaper options, probably grouped options, institutional options, which actually aren't cheaper or more expensive. But we'll be looking at people with disabilities having far less independence and far fewer choices in their lives.
Lisa, thank you for what you sent me to get ready for the show. You said, if Congress approves Medicaid per capita caps, the amount of federal Medicaid funding received by Wisconsin could, and that's conditional, could be cut by up to 25% over 10 years. I'm curious about your conditional use of the term could. Is that definite in the bill that could be debated tomorrow in the U.S. House?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that, because the only information we have to go on so far in terms of dollars is this estimate by the Congressional Budget Office that says nationally we can expect about up to a 25% cut in all federal Medicaid monies that goes to the states. And that's the level of detail that we're provided with. That's the level of detail that our congressional members have when making this pretty major decision tomorrow to change the 50-year history of how Medicaid is funded. We really don't have an exact percentage or number of what how Wisconsin will be impacted, because the bill talks about how each state will look different. And I think that's part of the concern from the ARC Wisconsin, from Family Voices of Wisconsin, is there are so many very vulnerable people who are currently receiving home and community-based services. Shouldn't we know more about what's at stake for Wisconsin? We do not have a number, and we think that's critically important.
Republican officials in Washington say this: yes, we're going to provide black grant, or per capita, but we're going to put the states in charge of the Medicaid program. Are you afraid what would happen if our elected officials in the Capitol were just given X amount of federal money and said, here, you run your own MA program?
I think, you know, we've seen, you know, disparate type of support in the state capitol for family care and IRIS and other long-term care programs. It was, you know, two budgets ago where there were caps put on family care. It was one budget ago where you had thousands of people come to the capitol concerned about family care IRIS 2.0 and HMOs coming in privatizing our system. So even though we've had champions for home and community-based services like family care and IRIS and county waiver programs, it hasn't been consistent where we can say that without additional federal oversight and kind of mandatory populations that have to be served types of benefits that have to be available, that we can be assured that the level and types of supports that Ben and his roommate and other people in our community receive will continue, particularly when you know the point of a federal block grant or a per capita cap is to reduce the amount of federal funding that comes to our state.
Well, Barbara, kind of the same question. You just said that there's going to, as a result of policy decisions made in the Capitol, the waiting lists are going to be wiped out. And IRIS is a program that's going to be respected, even though that was a pretty big fight 2 years ago.
Family care and IRIS, correct.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you don't trust whoever is our elected officials in the Capitol to treat Medicaid with the same generosity, maybe that's a wrong term, the same level of care that they've been providing?
So what I worry about is exactly along the lines of what Lisa said. If there is limited federal oversight, if there are limited federal rules, I am concerned that current benefits such as health check in the state, early periodic screening, diagnosis, and treatment, a critical benefit for children under the age of 21, which leads oftentimes to early intervention, which often leads to reduced costs in the future, will be wiped out. Or will be, you know, maybe it will be in one budget and maybe it will be in not be in another budget. But that consistency of care and benefit is critical to children's development, particularly if you're looking at it from a cost savings down the road. Right now, children with disabilities have access to Medicaid through the Katie Beckett waiver. We don't know if that will remain or not. That's a question. I think we're also going to see great variables between states. Right now, every state is able to put in their Medicaid state plan. So we see variation in Medicaid services now. Mm-hmm. However, if there is more limited federal oversight, we're going to see great distinctions between states and what they offer as part of their Medicaid state plan. And I think the big elephant out there is all who have looked at Medicaid block grants and per capita say that the funding that will come from the federal government will not be sufficient to cover the population. We're going to see a return to waiting lists. We're going to see a change in benefits, most likely a reduction in benefits. I fear that we'll see a reduction in these home and community-based supports. And we will also see potential limiting of population groups who have access to Medicaid because it will become more restricted just because there aren't enough dollars that are coming from the federal government.
Ben, we're talking about a Medicaid program that helps you with your four jobs and your home living arrangement. You pretty happy now? Would you like to keep the program that helps you with your roommate and all these other aids? Right.
Do you have a good life, Ben?
Do you have a good life? The mom can ask the question best. Do you have a good life?
Do you like your life?
Yeah. Yep. There's a
yeah.
Speaker Ryan is key to this. Mm-hmm. When your groups try to make these points with him, are you having any luck, or is he and the president so focused on getting it passed tomorrow that do you feel like you're being heard?
I feel like a lot of the attention has been on this promise for repeal of Obamacare. It's something that a lot of policymakers ran on in the election in November, and almost all the headlines and discussion has been about that. And I think that what we're seeing in the plan for that is that these major changes to Medicaid funding are what is paying for the repeal of Obamacare. And I'm not quite sure that the people who, you know, supported repeal of Obamacare were also signing up for a major restructuring of Medicaid funding and programming that support some of our most vulnerable residents in our home and community-based waivers. I mean, I think there was a lot of community support in the last budget for, you know, the supports that Family Care and IRIS provide, all of the jobs and the parts of our economy that providers are part of as part of that program. And I think that, you know, to pay for the repeal of Obamacare by making this fundamental shift in and fundamental cut in the federal promise to states is not something that a lot of people have been aware of. And so we've been trying as best we can to help families tell their stories and people with disabilities to share how they use community-based supports. But this is all moving so quickly. It seems it's just so unfortunate that such a major policy decision will be happening without all of the right information.
And Barb, if it passes the U.S. House tomorrow, what are you as an activist and as a mom going to do to try to get it changed as it goes through the rest of Congress, the U.S. Senate and the reconciliation and to the president's desk?
Well, I have this much hope that it won't pass tomorrow. So I'm holding out that if it in fact does pass the House tomorrow, we focus our efforts on the Senate. And I think, you know, Lisa, what you were just talking about is critical. I think it's critical to decouple Medicaid with changes to the Affordable Care Act, if that can be done. You know, they're so intertwined.
Yes.
But the reality is that, you know, a campaign promise or promises for many years are one thing. The direct impact that are going to be on people's lives is something else. You know, there's a coalition in Wisconsin called the Survival Coalition, and they put out a survey of how Medicaid would affect people. And this coalition, made up of dozens of disability-related organizations, supported this survey, and 1,500 people responded. That's a huge response rate, right? And so the Survival Coalition just put out a couple of days ago, for each congressional district, what changes in Medicaid would mean to individuals. And it's through that lens that you really get a glimpse of the impact and the magnitude of the effect it's going to have on people's lives. You know, I was reading something this morning that referenced Willowbrook in Staten Island, which was an institution for people with disabilities. And I grew up in New York, and I remember hearing Geraldo Rivera in the mid-70s doing a big expose, right? And a decade earlier, Robert Kennedy investigated that. And the horrors that were uncovered in that institution because people were not connected to community, because people were just warehoused, was abysmal. It was frightening. It was terrible. It was inhumane. And to think of where we came now, and we're still defending the needs of people with disabilities and their right to live in the community, it can be maddening sometimes.
Lisa, I want to go back to something that you said in the what you sent me to get ready for the show. If there was a cut of 25% over 10 years, the options would be, let's walk through the option: reduce reimbursement rates, limiting services and benefits, reinstating waiting lists for programs, or taking general fund money from other programs like K-12 school aids, the UW system. What choices do you think they'd make in the Capitol?
Well, I think that's a question that we already have answered. I mean, I think that's what the type of education that I'm trying to do in the state capitol is, that this is a decision being made in Washington, but it's going to come right here to the Capitol Dome. Legislators are going to have to make some really difficult decisions about their constituents who are coming to them with, I get 4 hours of personal care mm-hmm. during the day. Even losing 1 hour of that care can be critical to someone's life and ability to live in the community. How does a legislator answer that question? If that program mm-hmm. is going away, if that program has reduced mm-hmm. funding, are they going to raise taxes? Are they going to take money away from K-12 education? I mean, those are really difficult decisions. So I'll talk to legislators and they say, well, that's not our decision now. I said, but it will be. So I think we have a lot of educating to do in a very short period of time. So
can you see those policymakers in the Capitol raising taxes to preserve the level of MA services that are now being provided, Barbara?
Sure, I could see them having that discussion, but I don't think it would be very popular with their constituents. And so what we're going to get into is a values fight, right? What are the values that we as Wisconsinites hold dear to us, which is the conversation that I'm hoping some of the congressmen are having at the federal level. But we need to put our tax dollars where those values are, right? But we also need to rely on a federal-state partnership to make it viable.
Okay. So, Ben, you have a good life.
Yeah.
And you love country music. Yeah. And we've discussed who's your favorite star. What's your favorite current country song? Have you got a favorite?
It Don't Hurt Like It Used To by Billy Currington.
I love it.
It
Don't Hurt Like It Used To. You know what? I've heard that song. I like that song. You made a good choice. Lisa, I want to ask you this question. You have seen policymakers in the Capitol call MA funding unsustainable, the U word. And here's why they say that. MA spending in Wisconsin is up 35% in 3 years. That's all funds. But general fund revenues over that same period are up 85%, from $2 billion in fiscal 13 to $3.85 billion in 18. When you hear the unsustainable, what options are we going to have to develop some options to control costs?
I think, you know, when we talk about bending the cost curve in Medicaid, I think that we have to look toward our aging population. We're going to have more, you know, baby boomers who are going to want to live in their own homes. They're not going to want to live in nursing homes. I think we haven't fully realized the savings from expanding into family care and IRIS statewide, now expanding the children's program to eliminate that waiting list. I don't think we've realized all the savings there. At some point, I think we're going to level off, but just like any state, we're going to have this aging population moving in. I really do think, and we've tried very hard to educate legislators about our ideas for cost-effective solutions, getting more people working and earning more. Under the law, Ben and my daughter meet what's called an institutional level of care. If I'm not able to take care of her, if Barbara's not able to support Ben, if our kids don't have the supports they need, we have a right. Our kids could be moved into a very costly setting. We do not want that to happen. We want the sort of quality light touch supports that Ben needs to allow him to live a very quality independent life in the community. And by having him being able to work in the community and earn, he can pay for a lot of things in his life that he wouldn't if we were not emphasizing employment for him. So I don't think we've really realized the capacity that people with disabilities and family members can bring for those cost-effective solutions. So I would advise that we, you know, put a pause on this major decision at the federal level and certainly at the state level, and bring family members and people with disabilities together to talk about what are your ideas. That's certainly what we tried to do in the last budget, and we're willing to do that again.
Barbara, as having been active in this area for a while, is there more public support for some of these Medicaid-like programs that help recipients like Ben?
There is, absolutely. I mean, Dean County prides itself on being one county in the state, in the country, that has the highest percentage of people with disabilities employed in the community. What I have seen directly from Ben's employment since he left school over the past 4 years, almost 5 years, is that his Social Security payments have decreased based on, because his income has increased. So he is now paying more taxes, but it's because of some very light job support that he has at his jobs. He has one job two jobs in particular, both at the school district and at Q106, which is based on a partners in business model, which he does not have any direct job coach. What he has are colleagues of his at those job sites who help him with his tasks. So there's no charge to the Medicaid program for that. In his for his art business, when he works at Artworking, he's working in a community-based setting that supports other people with disabilities. So he is sharing that support. And similarly, his work at the city-county building, he's sharing support with other people with disabilities. So I don't want viewers to think that every person with a disability who's working in the community has one-on-one job coaching and job support. Yeah. A lot of times there are some very creative solutions that are utilized.
Well, we're almost out of time. Let's end the show this way. If you could speak directly to Wisconsin's 8 members of the U.S. House who might have to vote on that bill tomorrow, what short advice would you give them, Barb, first?
To think about Ben and all of the people with disabilities whose lives are going to be directly impacted by their decision.
And Lisa?
I think there's not enough information about impacts in our state. I think we built a really great system, and we're doing the right thing, and we need to continue doing that.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa Pugh, Ben Fleischman, and Barbara Katz. Ben, thanks so much for taking off work to join us, okay?
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.